So you have a itinerary and your love overlanding. You have plans to do it big on the trace and some super glamping. One idea, deep news and reviews, a podcast the first rate and here just for you. You don't have to think about it, join us and be about it. Something interesting we want to hear about it. Come on, let's talk about it. Welcome to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints Podcast.
Sponsored by Midland. Communication for every adventure. The industry leader in radio communication technology and innovation for over 50 years. Sponsored by MyMedic. Sponsored by Tembo Tusk. Sponsored by Shower Pouch. Sponsored by DeMoss Collective. Mission built and made for mobility. Sponsored by BrewTrek. Sponsored by Hard Impact Designs.
Always remember, the opinion you follow should be your own. Just consider the things stated here to be a second opinion from a complete stranger online.
We flew to Africa, spent 2.5 months there, and then when we got back, we picked up our vehicle and have been all over North America, Mexico, and the United States.
Okay.
So, Just a few months, and it's been tough. It's been really tough. A lot of unexpected financial expenses. You know, we think we're living in our vehicle, it's going to be cheap. But then we have to work too, you know, and that's the hard part. And we weren't really prepared for that section. Yeah. Had to get a lot of Airbnbs so that we could have service, have internet, so we could make communication with people and send emails and make phone calls so we could do this.
Right.
So we could do this.
Yeah, I don't think we were ready for being in different time zones and having meetings with people from the East Coast, Mid, and West Coast.
Yeah.
And it was really taxing, especially when we were in Africa. It was like, all right, you are how many hours out? Wait, are you on the East Coast or are you Midwest? Where are you at? So really trying to work that part of it ended up being its own challenge and always was a source of stress because we're trying to first find a place, the city that we could go to, or sometimes not even a city, it's just a town. Mm-hmm. And whether or not they had Wi-Fi and whether or not it was actual Wi-Fi.
Or if it was just something that I could send a text message.
Right.
Like
right.
that can right. be defined right. as Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Signal good enough to send a text.
Yeah.
But uploading an image or a file, that was all super
videos,
challenging. Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Right.
Not going to happen.
And then from a relationship standpoint, I think we did the calculation and we have like 82 cubic feet that we're living in that we share. And although, you know, the world is our backyard, it's tough. It's tough because, you know, you're literally feet away from a person 99.9% of the day. And all the bodily sounds and the looks, you know, when you're in a house, when you have space, I might roll my eyes, I might do something, and it's not necessarily caught because I got space. But when I'm sitting right beside you every day, you see everything.
What?
What's wrong? Why are you doing that?
No, say what you got to say, homie. We had that look. And look, this is the virtual, I'm in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you put your earplugs in and that was it. You know, that was essentially how we would achieve privacy is put in our AirPods and it's like, I don't want to talk to you right now. And you put your AirPods in and, you know, you stay in that space for some time. Or it wasn't even that it was a matter of not wanting to talk, but it really did just become wanting to have some me time. And
you
just really
need your personal space.
Yeah, you wanted personal space,
personal
and we just
space.
Didn't realize, you know, being in a house, how much you can get personal space by just going into another room, and or going out on a walk, you know. But for us, it was something that was taken for granted, I believe, and really hasn't been talked about much for couples who are overlanding. What those challenges look like because you're not able to get as much me time and you really do have to be intentional about setting aside time when I get to this place, I've got to go and do whatever I have to do to try to restore myself, to bring balance. Because if you don't, it starts to create more and more tension.
Yeah.
And then that tension, it starts to be a powder keg for nonsensical arguments and hardships and hard feelings. And so I feel like we spent the brunt of being in Mexico in that space.
Well, what was your balance between, say, in the vehicle or in something other than the vehicle, like Airbnbs or whatnot? What was that? How did you find that balance?
So we were probably 50% Airbnb just because, you know, we couldn't go weeks without working, weeks without communication. So it was probably 50%, which is more than we wanted to do, but we just weren't prepared. So when we go back out next year, we're going to make sure we're equipped with the Starlink and all that stuff so that we can be a little more flexible and mobile and not always have to get a hotel or Airbnb just to work. Because the pockets just cannot afford it. The bank account is like, nope.
Not going to happen.
So I heard some negative stuff. What have been the positives about the journey?
The people have been amazing. Very open, very warm, very receptive. I'm very curious. So you guys are staying in this thing. And that's been super amazing. Yeah.
The countries that we checked out in Africa, we flew into South Africa. We stayed for a few days just to sort of decompress, get ourselves together. We have some amazing friends that live there that we met in 2015 when we went, and they extended for us to stay with them and to help coordinate everything that we needed to do from their home. And Barry and Lorraine were just amazing for us. They were our home away from home, and nothing was lost. Nothing was lost. So we go into South Africa. We pick up a 2022 Toyota Hilux that had been slightly modified and outfitted to be an overlanding rig. And we make a beeline to Namibia, and we continue to push through Namibia until we got to the western coast, and then pushed up north and continued that way until we got to the Caprivi. Which is about a 100-mile narrow strip that the Germans conquered in the early 1900s. That took us to Zambia. We went across to Victoria Falls, thank you. Went to some villages up there, the Makuni, amazing people. And then we jumped down into Botswana and spent about 3 weeks traveling through Botswana before going back into South Africa and bouncing between Durban, Cape Town, and Joburg before flying back to America, coming up into this area, picking up our 200 series, and then starting to make this journey down to Cancun for our niece's wedding.
Yeah.
So the trip to Africa, was it just a trip to you? Was it, you know, that's the homeland. We're African American.
Absolutely.
Was it something above and beyond just checking something off the list for you? Do you have any anecdotal story to maybe give us an example of that, if that's the case?
Mm-hmm. So we visited South Africa in 2015. That was our first visit. And it was like before we were overlanders and knew nothing about this lifestyle, but we did Johannesburg, Cape Town, and then Kruger National Park. So it wasn't our first time, but since Nakoda and I were in college, we had this dream of traversing the continent of Africa. And somewhere along the way, one of our friends was like, so why not just do it? Just do it, you know? And an opportunity came up for us to go to Tanzania. So it was like, okay, we can do this Tanzania opportunity. But it was more like a tour kind of thing. It was like, but we're overlanders, so why do a tour?
Yeah. And the cost was going to be essentially the same.
Crazy expensive.
Right. So it was like, okay, we could go to we can go to Tanzania for 2 weeks and do Mount Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
Or we can save or have the same amount of money, but self-fund ourselves and do 2.5 months and do what we wanted to do.
Exactly. So
that's good for people to hear.
Yeah.
Because that's a big difference. Like 2.5 months and 2 weeks is a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a huge
difference. You know, it does require a lot of courage because we're self-guided.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we had a pretty much a an itinerary of places that we were going to stay. And they give you a big map, atlas, that tells you, you know, all of the places you're going. And we were using Gaia electronic devices and all of those things to get to where we were going. But as far as like knowing or having a guide or any of that, it was none of it. But right. Africa is set up for overlanders. And a lot of the places, even when you get there, they are set up to accommodate you as an overlander. So if you want to camp, they have those arrangements. But if you want something really fancy or really plush, you can have that. And yeah. Your pockets have to be deep, but, you know, they have everything. And depending, you know, all of it, anyone who's overlanding knows that when you are tired of being out in the bush, you want to come in, you want somewhere to take a hot shower and just take it off. I want to drop my bags so many days. And be done.
But I wanted to answer your question, Ophel, about like Africa, going to Africa and like what it meant to us. You know, I don't think I knew what it was going to mean to overland Africa when we went, because we had already kind of been to the continent, but doing it overlanding and being able to not just visit the cities, but all the small towns in between it. Like, you know, when you travel from in the U.S., when you go between, say, Atlanta and New York, it's a whole bunch in between that you just don't get to see. And it's the same way when you travel anywhere internationally, but I mean, specifically in Africa, the cities are just so completely different from the remote villages. And to meet people who had never seen a Black American, you know, who we were just something that they've seen on TV. Right. I was not prepared for that. Ever. You know, for people to be inspired just by our presence, like, because I mean, everybody knows the history of America and slavery, and to be able to come back to the continent, that's huge. That's huge. It's huge for African Americans, period. But to see other people respond to us like, you came back, you came home, right, and to truly be received as family, I didn't expect it. No. And then, like I said, seeing Black people who had never seen us before, to have another Black person want to touch my hair, and it was mind blowing. Yeah. It was mind blowing, but it really has shaped how I see things here. You know, having people not being familiar with, you know, a Black American, it's made me soften my perception of maybe a rural American that's not accustomed to seeing Black people. You know,
that person could be having the same experience. You know, I've only really ever seen Black people on TV, and we've had those situations. And, you know, as Americans, I think sometimes we look at it as African Americans and say, well, that's silly. Of course, you should have been and seen somebody Black. But how often have we seen Native Americans? Right. You know, how often have any of us actually had that kind of space? Mm-hmm. So in us understanding the possibility of not being a minority in that sense, we started to recognize that even as an American, it's unfair to have an expectation that someone should know who I am. You know, so those were some of the things that started to become more prevalent the longer we were there, and really started to give us pause about what it meant to be an African-American having the American experience. Mm-hmm. So we really, I think, changed a lot about our outlook just in general about what it means to be American.
And many of those countries you went to, I found too, because most of them were colonized.
Yeah.
So they had their own internal struggles for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that was super tough. That was really tough, specifically in Namibia, to see the effects of colonization, and it was still there in a very real way. Mm-hmm. And what was so wowing was Namibia looked to South Africa for the blueprint for how they achieved freedom from colonization.
Yeah.
South Africa looked to America and what we did in the civil rights in the early 60s. So to look at them and see that It's many ways they were like, we were their superheroes. Mm-hmm. And now we've come back home was all every single time. Just it would take your breath away to have the conversations and to have questions being asked about what it means to be American, whether you were going to stay and if you were coming back, when. I still get messages on WhatsApp about when are you coming back and what does it look like? So that I think was the most riveting aspects of traveling there.
I like that. So from talking to you on camera and off camera, I've come to the conclusion that you guys transitioned from being tourists to travelers and you value immersion in the culture that you're at. Am I?
Yes.
Do we have an agreement? For the audience and people listening, could you express the value of immersing yourself in a culture as opposed to visiting a culture?
Yes. The more time you spend with a culture, the more you start to understand the nuances of it, right? But fundamentally, what we've seen as travelers, global citizens, if you will, is everywhere births, weddings, deaths, and like graduations, all of those kind of benchmarks, moments, milestone moments in people's lives, everyone celebrates them. Every single one celebrates them, or they mourn that one. And what you start to see are the intricacies of those relationships and those families and how they do it. Because, you know, what is the Mexican 15-year-old girl's birthday called?
The quinceañera.
Yeah, that is very cool. And I was really hoping that we would have the opportunity to see it, because in having those intimate moments, you really start to recognize what you have at home and what these experiences are when you're at home and why they're so endearing. And I think that the longer you are immersed in another culture, specifically for us as minorities in America, to go to another country and our skin makes us a majority, we no longer are seeing it through the eyes as a minority. And that was a game changer as well, because I'm no longer able to qualify myself in a country, even though I'm still a minority because I'm a visitor, but someone's looking at me from the hue of my skin and it's like, you're from somewhere on the continent. Where? And that's it. So I think it changes and helps you to become more sympathetic and empathetic to other humans, regardless of where you're from.
Yeah. But I think traveling versus being a tourist, you know, being a tourist is all about having fun, going and seeing and doing. But when you're traveling and really immersing yourself in the culture, it takes a level of effort, you know, like to try to learn the language. And in Namibia, it was really hard because they don't have a national language. Language is very regional. So almost every other day we're having to start over. Okay, how do I say hello here? Whereas in Botswana, they have a national local language, Setswanan. So we were able to practice and be more consistent, but it's hard. And I think I had a lot of compassion for also people who immigrate to the United States and learn languages quick. Yeah. You know, I've been here 6 months. I learned English. I learned your language. Yeah. And me, I'm fumbling. Yeah. So I just think going and traveling and really immersing yourself in a culture and experiencing how people do things and why they do them and learning, it just makes you a better person. And not as judgmental. You know, we had an experience with a traditional healer when we were in Africa. And stereotypically, it's like a witch doctor or, you know, something like that. But it's, I mean, a really good experience. Mm-hmm. So it just really reframes how you think about things when you immerse yourself into the culture. So, long answer.
So let's talk about coming back to the States, stateside in Mexico. How about those travels? You guys are laughing. So
coming back to the States was really hard first, because when we left, we were kind of forced to disconnect. When we left, what was it, Omicron? was the
was just the variant that was coming up.
Russia had just invaded, and it was all these things, and there's all this stress because that's what you hear on the news and Instagram and TV, and it's just stressful. But you go away and you don't have to think about it because you're not being bombarded with it every day. But as soon as we get back to the U.S.
But even in Africa, though, it wasn't a big their news coverage is just completely different.
It's not as sensationalized.
So even when we are seeing the news, it's stuff about what's happening in South Africa or Namibia. And we're clueless of what's happening in America, like Final Four. In any and all sports was like, I have no idea what was happening. So I'm on like getting text messages from family asking about, okay, who won the game last night? You know, just so I could be somewhat cognizant of what kind of things were taking place in America. But it almost felt like a time warp or some kind of black hole or something, because America moved on. And we were still framed in what we saw in March, you know. So that was an interesting experience. Mm. But when we crossed the border in Mexico and came back into America, it was just like every border crossing. It was a very hard change in culture. And that change into the American experience was like, oh, yeah. We're back home. And you're starting to see some.
Elaborate on that a little bit. Is that a positive or a negative?
Some parts of it were definitely positive. Other parts were not so much. You know, Americans have become more isolated and less friendly, and even more so than when we, or at least we have been conditioned to think it was somewhat friendly when we left. But when we came back, it felt like people were very separate. And although we were in Mexico and we were certainly felt like outsiders, we didn't feel ostracized or like I'm not interacting with you intentionally. So that was a really big thing. But then being able to get back into the food scene and be able to go to see movies and all of that stuff. It was those things were, you know, good moments.
Because there were so many things that we missed about being home. Yeah. Well, being in the United States family, being in the same time zone with people, you know, getting to communicate easily.
Easier.
Right. Lemon pepper wings in Atlanta. It was tough. Because everything changes. The things that you like to do, the things that you like to eat, you can't get those things. And you really have to adjust and adapt.
Yeah.
Never thought I would be tired of tacos. But I got tired of tacos. Mexico's like, if I get one more taco.
What else is on the menu?
Cravings for American stuff that you don't normally even want.
Right. Yeah. I just want pizza, some chicken wings, some grits.
Sonia was on this grits thing, and it just became more and more. She's like, I just gotta get some grits. It's like, when are we gonna be somewhere I can get some grits?
The first thing I bought at the grocery store when I got back to the country was grits. And I didn't cook them right away, but I was like, I need to have them. So the next time I'm in a house, you know, in four walls, I can cook them and make them all nice and creamy and steamy and buttery. And
yes, ma'am.
Ain't nothing like home right but now. A good hot bowl of grits.
Yeah, she was fiending.
I was fiending. Yeah.
All right. So if you could go back, I'm sure there's plenty of things that you could change or you'd do differently. What's one thing that you would do differently if you went down this journey again?
Stay longer.
I mean, as far as going from becoming
corporate world, sort of tied down to a home, and going on the road, sort of a nomadic experience. Like, what would you change in the transition? I guess, right, Phil? I mean,
that's exactly what I'm saying.
I don't think we need the vehicle that we have. It's overkill. You know, when you talk about traveling, we're talking about this thing as overlanders, and what do you need the vehicle to do? And there were certainly a ton of places that we went that we knew that the capability of the truck was what got us there. You know, 5 days on the beaches in Todos Santos. Mm. You know, we don't have a beach to ourselves. We have an entire coastline to ourselves for 5 days. I think we saw like one vehicle the entire time we were there. And that was a function of what the truck gave us. But 90% of the time, you know, we were mostly on highway. You know, you get off trail or you get off road to get to a destination or to play. But when you're overlanding, your vehicle is your home. And you can't just get out there yee-hawing and mess around and either get stuck, which you're going to be very much alone because who are you calling? Right. You know, when you're in Mexico and you're out somewhere in the Baja, there's one, can you even make a call? That would be the first part. And then two, who would that be and how long would it be before someone could even get to you? You know, you could be really in life danger in situations. I know we were. But for the most part, when we weren't in those particular scenarios, it was just highway. And it's like, I don't know that we would need all the things in the Land Cruiser to do North America. Going back to Africa, certainly. I think that the cruiser is built out for the punishing roads that Africa has, you know. But
I'm glad you bring that up because, like, that's sort of, we talk about that a lot. Phil and I talk about that sometimes, like the definition of overlanding. And I think a lot of people mistake that for off-roading or something else. And that's not really what it is, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's vehicle-dependent travel where the focus is on travel. You know, you don't need the big souped-up vehicles. You just need an adventure spirit and to be flexible, you know, because I mean, people overland in everything. They overland in motorcycles. They overland in Corollas. Yeah. They overland in big old souped up apartments on wheels. You know, there's so many different extremes and you just don't need all of that. So I would definitely not build a car as robust as it is.
So I should do the helicopter thing?
You know, you can never go wrong with a helicopter.
Highly recommend helicopters. Exactly.
But you know, I don't know if I would change anything about the experience other than the vehicle build. I think the getting there is the tough part. You know, how you get there, there's not really a right wrong way to do it. There's always going to be hiccups. There's always going to be unexpected things. And I know we experienced some amazingly unexpected things that I would have never thought we would have dealt with. And if I could change it, if I had the ability to change it, I would. But I mean, a lot of things are just outside of your control. And I'm specifically talking about like our home refinance process and getting our home devalued and all that stuff. If I could go back and change history, that is what I would do.
Okay.
And because that would have made our process so much smoother.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
That was, I think, super tough. And the American experience, specifically for African Americans, we were at the time, we had wanted to leave a year ago, but we went through the process of refinancing our house, and we ended up in this situation where the home appraiser devalued the house, and then the bank co-signed on the devaluation. Yeah. And so we hadn't been able to really talk about it because it's still under investigation, and I'm not going to go much further than that. But that added a degree of stress that became another one of those things that unnecessarily wears on you as a human.
Right.
And it, you know, it's really tough to want to be proud as an American when you feel like you're always being punched on, no matter how good you are or whatever it is that, you know, you walk the line. Like, I've, over my entire 49 years, I've had like 3 speeding tickets. None of them are on my record because they weren't really ever anything significant, but top secret clearance. And you know, you still, it's like, what is it that I can do to say I'm American?
Right.
You know, so to go out into the world and you're in Africa or you're in Mexico, they don't see me as African American.
Not at all.
Not at all. You are 100% American. Just American. And it is one of those things that you start to recognize that the world really does just acknowledge us as American. and what is it that we want to say about the American culture? And for us, after having that experience and recognizing that if we are Americans and not just African Americans, and I'm not trying to belittle that, but how can we have, or how can we lean into helping other Americans really lean into this? You know, that we can buy, or that we live the creed that this country has promised everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought that energy back, and it's really started to infuse with how we wanted the gathering to look.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly wanted to lean into African-American brothers and sisters because we know the value of being out in nature. We also wanted to lean into these rural communities to give mainstream Americans an opportunity to perhaps say something different than how they've been cast on television and on news. Do they have an opportunity to not be considered racist or antagonistic? So for us, we could lead in a way that helped Americans become closer and not as divided as it was when we walked into the country back in July, August.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we're all the same. We all bleed red. And wherever we go, we are looked at as Americans. We're not Black Americans.
Right.
We're not African Americans. No matter what we think we are, we're just regular old Americans.
Gringos.
Gringos. We were in Cuba one year. This was 2019. No, 2020.
It was 2019.
Because we were there during the inauguration. Okay. We were there.
Details.
Yeah, details. It doesn't even matter. But we were having a conversation. You know, they were asking about all the politics in America and this and that. And it was like, well, how do you look at us? It was like, gringo. It's like, but we're Black. And we always thought gringos were white people.
Yeah,
that's what I was. Yeah. I was like, no, you're American, you're gringo. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah, essentially, if you don't speak Spanish natively, you're gringo.
Yep.
You know, and that was a bit of a shock. So. Mm-hmm.
So now going forward, you talk about like this, you've realized these things. What's kind of your plan going forward, and how can you, what's your plan to bring this enlightenment, I guess, right? Or whatever we want to call it.
Well, I think a lot of the plan is what we're doing right now with the gathering. It was initially created as, you know, safe space where Black and brown people can, you know, come outside, feel comfortable, learn about the outdoors. Never an exclusive environment, but we wanted to make sure that people that look like us felt comfortable. And I think with our new enlightenment, just making sure that everyone feels comfortable in the environment, because we did get a whole lot of questions this year. If white people were welcome, people afraid that they're going to be the only one. Am I going to be the token white person? And it was really weird to get those questions from white people, because I'm like, I'm a token almost everywhere I go. At work, you know, I was a token. I would be the only Black woman sitting in a conference room. When we go to Overland Expo, the very first year we went, I think we counted 12. You know, to feel,
I think that's when I met you guys.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, we get very accustomed to being the minority.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, inviting other people in and making sure that everyone is comfortable being a minority.
Yeah.
You know,
because I think if you experience safe space in the concept of being a minority, then you start to understand how you can help create that safe space. You know, I think I was talking with someone about that they felt like even though they were in Mexico, they didn't feel like they were a minority. And I was like, well, I don't know what your experience was, but leaning into being a minority helps you to grow wherever you go, you know, and then you can start to see what it looks like for other people in your own country and how you can help them when you go, because you know how you felt when you were in Bolivia, you know, or when you was in Chile, you know, and now it's like, okay, I get that. I know that I was looking for other Americans. It was just like super geek that I ran into an American and was able to, you know, have a conversation with them. So what does that mean when I see two Black people show up at an Overland Expo event? should I, you know, I don't think you need to go and introduce us. I think we'll find each other. I'm fairly sure of that. But to, you know, understand that that joy is embedded in the same type of joy that you would have had when you were in another country, I think starts to help soften the hearts of everyone. Yeah, the thought really is to lean into the experiences of every person, you know, in because fresh eyes, old eyes, still are different eyes on whatever it is. And that perspective is valuable. And for us, you know, to go out here and look at some of the rigs that we've never seen, I'm learning. But I also want to encourage people to feel comfortable learning, because the more curious you are about things that you're unfamiliar with, the less likely you are to judge it in a negative light.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
So I want to ask a question of you that I think maybe some of the audience members want to know, that probably everybody up here has gotten this question many, many, many times. Now that you've been overlanding and you've been doing it full time for now, give me the three most valuable pieces of gear that you think is in your rig, whether it's the rig or a tires, refrigerator, a electric blanket, whatever that may be.
Just three. Just three.
Well, you got more than that?
Hey, you can keep going. You can keep going. Absolutely.
So my first one is easy. Most essential piece of equipment for me camping, overlanding, whatever, is my portable toilet. I don't go outdoors for multiple days without my portable toilet. I don't care what the situation is. You want to do a second one?
Headlamp.
Headlamp.
Clutch.
Clutch.
Right. It's hard enough to find stuff, you know, in the dark or in the light, but then you get it in the dark, forget it.
Yeah, and I hate holding a flashlight in my hands because that's just one less hand I have. So having a headlamp really does help me once the sky goes dark, you know?
And a third, I would say a really comfortable mattress. Like something just really comfortable to sleep on. Because, I mean, if you can't get a good night's sleep, if you're tossing and turning every night, like, why am I doing this? Like, really, why am I doing this if I can't go to sleep at night? Yeah. So get just make sure whatever you're sleeping in is comfortable.
Yeah. That you have to, whatever you get, like a tent, whatever kind of tent it is, because this is your shelter, you know, whatever that shelter is, to make sure that it's wind element proof, buys you sanity in bad weather, bad conditions. You need to be able to get out of the elements to whatever degree that means. So a great tent is essential piece of gear.
Did you guys find like there were certain things that would just irritate you to no end and correct them? Because I know for me, there's certain things over the years, and some of them could be really small things that would drive you storage.
Storage. Living in your house is hard to keep it clean. Living at 82 square feet is really, really hard to keep it clean. So that was probably one of the most irritating things.
Maddening. Maddening.
Yeah. Storage is probably one of the most irritating things. Just figuring out where things go, where everything fits, how you can get to everything easiest, most irritating.
And I imagine you repacked probably 3,000 times.
Yeah.
Every day. Yeah. Every time we move that truck, it's a pack out. If we land or stay at someone, wherever we stay, as soon as we start unpacking, the truck never looked, no pack was ever the same, no matter if nothing changed. And it drove us bananas because we overpacked the truck when we left, because we honestly didn't think we were trying to take all of the things, but we certainly took all of the things, and we couldn't get to anything. And because we couldn't, it was just argument after argument about where is it? I don't know. And then you look and it's like buried behind 10 boxes, and it's like, why are all these boxes here?
Yeah.
And then like you don't use something because it's too much of a pain to get to,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Like, I think probably our first 5 days in Mexico, we didn't cook because it was too difficult to get to everything. Yeah. And it's like, I have to take everything out and I have to put everything up and we were moving every day. So it's like, I can't do this.
Yeah,
we ended up donating
gifting
a lot. Like,
we made a lot of people happy.
Yeah. Like, we overpacked food. We had this whole bin of dry goods. It was severely overpacked. We ended up donating it. And yesterday, during Jennifer Farr Davis's class, she's a backpacker. And it seems weird you talk about people backpacking for months with everything that they need on their back. And we're complaining about having a whole vehicle with everything that we need. But one of the things that she said is that we pack our fears, you know? So you think about the things that you're afraid of. You're afraid to be hungry. You're afraid to be wet and cold. You know, you're afraid of all these things. So you pack contingencies, contingency upon contingency, and then you end up overpacking. And like after she said it, I thought about it and I was like, yeah, I packed a whole bunch of food and I realized food is cheap in Mexico. I'm not going to be hungry. This is the last place I'm going to be hungry. So you know what? Let us gift. It was actually Nakota. Nakota was like, Sonia, we don't need all this stuff. And I was like, no. I was still afraid. But once I realized it, I was like, you know, I can let this go and we can bless someone else. Okay. You're right. I surrender.
Yeah.
So let's look at that from another angle. Most of us pack some, we at least have one luxury item. What's that luxury item that you guys have that you really don't need but you really want?
So mine, I'm gonna give a shameless plug here. My friend Latoya Montgomery and Sovereign Soul Medicine, she makes these amazing candles that relax me and soothe me and make me feel at home. And she gifted me with 3 candles when I left, and I carried them in my bag, and everywhere we got to an Airbnb, I burned one as an opportunity to have some, you know, some self-care.
I get you.
And every time I've seen her, she's given me candles so that I can carry on the journey. And that's my luxury item.
I don't know that I can say that I have a luxury item. We do have one item that we have been carrying that is luxurious. It's a bottle of Ace of Spades. And it was gifted to us as an anniversary gift, and we were told that we would know when to drink it.
Yes.
And that bottle has bounced around with us doing absolutely nothing but consuming space.
Yeah,
because we haven't had the moment.
Exactly. So Ace of Spades, for anybody who's not familiar, is a bottle of champagne, and it's all actually owned by the Carters, Beyonce and Jay-Z. But Nakota and I, one of our just things that we do, we always keep a bottle of good champagne, not like, you know, the cheap sparkling wine. We keep a bottle of good champagne on hand at all times. For the good or the bad,
yeah, you know, for the best of times and the worst of times.
And we did it when we were at home. We always had like a bottle of Veuve or something in the cabinet. If it's really, really good, we're going to celebrate. If it's really, really bad, you know what? We still going to celebrate because it's going to be better tomorrow.
Yeah,
and that's something that when we decided to leave, we decided to carry this bottle of champagne with us. And it's still with us. So although times have been really, really hard,
It hasn't been hard enough to pop.
And we've had some really, really good times, but not quite good enough to pop. So that's a luxury item.
That's
for us.
A luxury item.
I love that.
Last night. We snuck in. Y'all it's already gone.
No, you didn't.
So if you guys don't mind, I'm going to offer up the chance for somebody in the audience to ask you a question.
Sure.
Does anybody have a question they want
to
ask?
I've been dying to ask you.
On the mic.
Okay. I was curious. Nimbia. You said. What was that before they like broke away from Europe, like back in the 1900s? What country was it? Was it like the Ivory Coast or was it?
It was, I think it was considered like Western South Africa.
Yeah. Western. Yeah. Oh, it was that far down south. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was thinking, okay.
So above, right above South Africa is Namibia and Botswana.
Yeah, okay.
Western South Africa.
Yeah, and it was Western South Africa.
Okay. I was just curious about the colonization and all of that. I was just curious. Yeah. Thank you.
Does anybody else have a question?
Yeah, I got one.
Dakota, Sonia, I know you guys have a mission. Could you talk a little bit about your mission statement for Staples and Tents?
So, our mission, and you just caught me cold because normally I can tell it to you. But, I mean, at its core, it's to bring diversity to the outdoors by creating positive imagery of Black and brown people outdoors to show that we thrive in these spaces. And we do that through our YouTube channel, Instagram, as well as creating events like this to bring people together and allow people to thrive. So with that, we always want to educate people and inspire people. And that's what we're doing here
Excellent
today.
Mission statement.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right, we got time for one last one. Does anybody else have a question?
Can you come up?
Yeah, sure. 10 seconds.
When considering your living quarters, with a tent, do you, you said something about you, you look at considering the weather and the elements. What about animals? Do you have any consideration for that? And if yes, please share.
Yeah, it's, you know, I know, right? Run.
Right, run.
Fast.
You know, tent camping inherently, you're as close to nature as you can, you know, get other than to say that you just open camp, I believe, which is something that I've become more familiar with, which is people just sort of sleep on a mat or just sleep out in the open. So it's a thing in and of itself. And then, of course, you have hammock camping and then tent camping. And for us, the animals have not been so much of a thing. I think they see the vehicle as a complete structure. And so it's not something that they're looking at, and it's specifically in Africa. It's just a structure. And as long as you don't have your body hanging out windows, which is, you know, how people end up getting chomped on is they go and they get excited. It happens so casually. You know, when we first went to Africa in 2015, we get off the airport when we're heading out to Kruger. And within 3 minutes of leaving the airport, there's a huge giraffe just walking down the side of the road. And the first thing we did was let the window down. It was like trying to stick a hand out to take photos. And, you know, we had so many of those moments, but it's just this kind of natural feel that you want to do it. Well, every time you do that, you're really putting yourself at risk if it's a apex predator that's around you. So after we really started to learn the lay of the land and how to be outdoors with wildlife in Africa, we were really a lot easier about what it is that we're using as our tent. It's not a real big thing for us.
And so I would say, do what makes you feel comfortable. People camp in trailers, people camp in rooftop tents, people camp in ground tents. People sleep on the actual ground. It's all about your comfort level. The most important thing, everybody talks about leave no trace. It's real for a reason. You know, if you have a stake beside you, the animal's going to come, whether you're in a rooftop tent or whatever. When we would camp every morning, there are signs of wildlife around us. Lion prints, hyena prints, elephant prints. And it's
fresh.
Fresh. It just happens. It is what it is. But it's no different than being in the U.S. And with bears and whatever other predators or scary things we have here. You just need to be smart. And your sleeping quarters really don't matter. It's everything that you do to deter the animal.
Yeah. Even when we traveled out west, we didn't really eat at our campsite, we would go somewhere to see something scenic, like a great sunset. So the goal was get to a sunset, eat, clean up, and then drive back to our camp. And any of the food, we would put it in the refrigerator or inside the truck and then shut it. So we never, ever, to this day, I don't know that we've ever had food inside of our tent, ever.
Yeah, no. And especially when in like grizzly bear country, that's when we were going and not eating at the campsite. It was like, I don't know if I can be that clean to not attract a grizzly bear. I'm just going to eat somewhere else. So I don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah,
so yeah, we just made it an adventure. We would go and find a really beautiful place to watch sunset, enjoy dinner, and then go back to camp. So we would make sure that our space was nice and clean and hope that the people before us didn't, you know, throw chicken grease on the ground. I don't know.
So guys, I could do this all night and I don't want to overtake your event because I could do this all night. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have asked you that people might want to know?
Next year? So there's a whisper about next year. We are doing one gathering, officially planned, currently one gathering next year. We'll be back here tentatively October. You know, Dakota, stop.
The commitment is, I love where we are, but I would like to take a look at a few other places that have been shared with us that would be worth exploring. You know, for us, each gathering has been somewhere fairly unique. I like to think that most of us hadn't experienced Hendersonville or a fall in North Carolina. Similarly, out in Colorado was the same thing. In Crawfordville, Georgia, was the first time a lot of people were seeing rural Georgia in that kind of light. So for us to find places that are inspirational or not necessarily on the radar is really important. And if we can find somewhere that causes all of us to stretch, you know, because anybody who came to Vancouver, it was a stretch. It was a stretch even for us. And to hear the stories of people preparing for that journey, seeing it play out on Instagram, people building their rigs or getting their rigs ready, new gear, and all of the things to take this really big road trip across America and to see America, I think is wonderful. And every time we get to help someone travel across our beautiful country, we know that it gives you that much more pride in the country itself. And if we're all proud of being an American and we can lean into what it means to embrace each other as Americans, then the country can become better. So for us, I love here, you know, and I don't want to say that we're not coming back. I just would like to leave it open for us to see somewhere else.
So clearly we have a difference of opinion about what's next. But what we can promise is that the gathering is not going anywhere. The gathering will be back next year and the community will continue to grow. And you asked if there was anything I want to share. It's been a journey. It's absolutely been a journey. And we are here because of all of you guys' support. We so appreciate you. The days, months, weeks leading up to this were tough. We questioned whether or not we wanted to do this. But being here and being amongst all this positive energy and hearing everyone talk about the impact that this event and us has on their lives, It every time I am encouraged and understand why we put ourselves through all this drama. So if I could ask anything of any of you guys, it's to tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell them about the gathering, tell them about Staples and Tents, tell them about our YouTube, tell them to go buy a shirt, you know, tell them to become a Patreon, tell them to do something because it's a lot.
For everybody out there, how do they get a hold of you? What are your social media?
Yeah, so Staples and Tents. Our last name is Staples, and we sleep in tents. So I-N-T-E-N-T-S. And our website is staplesandtents.com. Our Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, everything is Staples and Tents. So we're pretty easy to find. Yeah.
So first, I want to thank Sonya for keeping our record 2-0. For crying on the podcast.
I have really been trying to hold it back.
You did a good job.
I have really been, like, there were a couple times I was like, nope, not gonna do it. But I mean, it really truly means a lot to see each and every person who is here.
Yeah. And to know that stories.
Clean. That's clean.
To know our stories and how they're connected. And that some of you have been friends or family for life. And I see that my mom camping for the first time, my daughter's mother and her husband, they're here camping for the first time, supporting us. My Uncle B, and to see that people are taking their first camping trips. Mm-hmm. And first journeys, and that it indeed was that you came and you had safe space and you were able to explore and curiously tap into that childlike energy and see and touch and be amongst each other is the point. And if it helps you help someone else, then you have won. And I feel like we have won the day. You know, we can rest easy after having these experiences with y'all. So thank y'all for being here. We know that you did not have to be here, but you came.
Yeah.
Well, for me, it was a privilege to do this. Thanks for doing a second podcast with us. Is there anything you want to say, Mike?
No, I love being here. This has been an awesome weekend. And thank you guys for talking to us today. And we're going to have a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah. Yes. Edgewood Heavies, I saw two of the band members come.
Let's wrap up the podcast before we do now.
Oh, sorry.
All right, guys. You already know what I'm going to say. Stay safe, tread lightly, and hopefully I'll see you here or on a trail soon.
You have been listening to Waypoint Overland's Random Waypoints. Like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more.